So, how do I move? I know. We'll wait for those still coming. We're just talking together. How do I move from? Let's first address this. What happens if my spouse is in one season and I'm in another? Okay. You're not actually able to be in different seasons. It means that one of you is deceived. Which is most likely the husband, okay? But the idea of the husband filling it out and saying, oh, we're in summer and the wife feels she's in autumn or winter, then sad news, my friend, you're actually in autumn or winter, okay? you're not in summer because you want it. Okay, so that's how it works with spouses. something I spoke to a couple earlier on as well. in our experience, it's rare that a young married couple would actually be in summer. They're actually more in spring. Summer is something that you can really develop only after years. And early on in marriage, when you don't have many challenges, depending, maybe you did have many challenges earlier on in marriage, but before you bring kids into the mix, before you bring loss of income or the death of a close relative or something like that, before you bring challenge into the mix, it is sort of hard to really figure out where you're at because it's plain sailing. But when those difficult times come, then the metal is tested and then you actually realize where you're at. And so summer is not something that we quickly do this weekend. So in other words, oh, we're actually in winter or autumn, and we're going to do a couple of things here, and by Monday we're in summer. Okay, it doesn't work that way. It is sort of weeks, months, and years. It is making the right choices, doing the right kind of things, and having the right heart and spirit in your marriage, day in, day out, week in, out, month in, month out, year in, year out, in many ways, decade in and decade out, leads you to summer. Now, we are certainly not experts in this. We've been married, I neglected to say, we've been married for almost 13 years. We have three children. For those of you that know us, we have three children, three girls. One is 8, her name is Michaela. Number 2 is 5, her name is Chloe. And number 3 is 11 months, and her name is Pippa. And yes, you get to a point where you forget your own children's names. Or actually, I remember all of their names, but not to the right kid. Now, her mom used to do this. They also had 3 kids, and I thought, how could you do that? And now I'm in that phase where it is Chloe, I mean, Pippa, I mean, Michaela. Kids. You. Okay, how do you transition? Now, this is not comprehensive. We can't in 30, 40 minutes give you a comprehensive way of how to do this. We're certainly not the experts, but here are some things that we've learned. if this thing would work. There we go. You need to know your God-given role. Okay, in order for you to be able to move through the seasons in the right direction, you need to know your God-given role as a husband or as a wife. As God created us all, what is your role supposed to be in the marriage? I'll start with the men. In Ephesians 5, can everyone see on the screen there? Those guys are going to have some difficulty seeing. I wonder if we can twist it a bit. Well, I'll read it. Now, let me read it, and then we'll take it from there. This is what it says in Ephesians 5 in the Message translation. The husband provides leadership to his wife the way Christ does to his church, not by domineering, but by cherishing. Now, if you feel anything like me, you feel like, okay, let's pack our bags and go home right now. Okay, the key phrase, obviously, there is not by domineering, but by cherishing. Somehow, we grew up in a world, or still busy growing up, I take it, in a world where we think that that men must rule the house. They must be the one in charge. When they speak, they want to hear one click. And that is often what we've seen our parents or our grandparents do or relatives do, and we think that that is the way that it's supposed to work. But that's not the way that it's supposed to work. The Bible says not by domineering, but by cherishing. The way that Jesus led the church. Jesus didn't lead the church by saying, I want to hear one click. He led the church by serving the church, by loving the church, by cherishing the church. What is our God-given role as husbands? Our role is to cherish our wives. In other words, my role as a husband is, if my wife is not happy or joyful, you're not always happy, but joyful, there's a difference between the two. If she's not joyful, I need to check myself. Because it's my responsibility to make sure that she feels cherished. Now, I'm not God. I cannot influence whether she'll be happy at work or that the kids won't get sick, whatever. But whatever her circumstance in life, I can influence whether she would feel cherished in that circumstances. I cannot influence what will happen to her, but I can influence how she will feel in the time of it happening to her when I cherish her. That's my God-given role. To cherish means to protect, to care for, and to hold dear. Now, as husbands, our God-given role is that our wives need to feel protected by us, cared for by us, and held dear by us. They need to feel like we make sure that they're okay. We make sure that they don't burn out. We make sure that they have time to take care of themselves in whatever way that might be, that they feel looked out for. That is our responsibility. They can sometimes run a little bit out of control. And what I mean by that is that they're biting off more than they can chew, whether it is in a career, whether it's with the children, whether it's around the house. And it's our responsibility not to put them in place, but to help them and to guide them so that they would feel cherished. The scripture continues, and it says, husbands, go all out in your love for your wives. All out. Now, I think men know how to go all out for themselves. Right? You are going to see that game, no matter what. You are going to buy that car. You are going to get that gadget or whatever it is that you want. You know, we know how to do all out. Now, it says, husbands, go all out in your love for your wives, exactly as Christ did for the church. And here's the catchphrase, a love marked by giving, not getting. I see smiles on the wives' faces. A love marked by giving, not getting. I recently read a story about a dad trying to explain to his four-year-old daughter how marriage works. So now we're married, mom and I got married. Marriage, how does that work? He said, explain, but the more he explained, got nowhere. And eventually he took out the photo album and of their wedding day and he says, you know, mom got dressed and the car and the church and walking down the aisle. And here's the minister and then the pulpit, I put on the ring. And he said, now, do you understand? She says, I finally get it. So this is the day that mom started working for us. Does your wife feel that way? That the day that she got married to you is the day that she started working for you. Does she feel like your mother or your wife? Cherished or your slave? Our role is that our marriages and our relationship with our spouses needs to be marked by giving, not getting. The scripture continues, Christ's love makes the church whole. His words evoke her beauty. Everything he does and says is designed to bring the best out of her, dressing her in dazzling white silk, radiant with holiness. And that is how husbands ought to love their wives. It's our responsibility as husbands to make our wives radiant, to make them feel beautiful. We need to lead them, but not in the way that we so often think. We need to lead them spiritually. We need to be the ones that's first up in the morning to have our time with God, to pray, to read our Bibles. We need to be the ones that are the first to initiate to say, I think we need some help with our marriage. Let's approach so-and-so. We need to be the ones that are cherishing it, saying, we want this marriage to blossom. We want this marriage to do great. And I'm going to lead us there. I'm going to lead us in humility, meaning I will model what it looks like to be humble. I will fight to try and show you what it looks like to be close to God. I will fight to try and show you what it looks like, how to forgive or how to apologize. I want to lead you. I want to serve you. I want to help you. It's very easy for men to be dictatorial in our marriages. And it's very easy for us to just try and get our own way. I mean, we've had this so many times through the years. This was probably my biggest sin in our marriage is just being difficult. I mean, I've shared this before as well. The kind of things that we would do is, as we've been living in the same house now for 7 years. But when we originally bought the house, or put in an offer for the house, let me put it that way. When we originally put in an offer for the house, we wanted to renovate it. And we put in an offer, it was not accepted yet, and we were in bed trying to discuss how we'll renovate it and where the fridge would go in the kitchen. And we ended up in a heavy disagreement about where the fridge would go in the renovated house that we don't even know if we'll get yet, and we've not even renovated it yet. We don't even own it yet. And I felt like the fridge should go in a certain place, and she felt like the fridge should go in another place. Now, husbands, this is where we need to be able to lead with humility and say, does it really matter? Have the fridge wherever you want in a nice way. Now, husbands tend to do this. In other words, sweetie, if you love the fridge to be there, it can be there. It can be on the roof. But it's most practical there. This is usually my advice. If the decision will not cause you to fall away from God, to leave God, or will not bankrupt you, let it go. If it will not cause you to fall away, leave God as a couple, or it will not bankrupt you, let it go. Where does it matter where the fridge is, what color the car is, how long the lawn is, whatever it might be? If it won't cause those things, let it go. That's our responsibility to lead our wives in that way.
The scripture that I want to look at is in the same passage. It speaks about wives, understand and support your husbands in ways that show your support for Christ. Now, this is an incredibly high calling. In verse 24, I think it'll also come up on the screen. It says, so just as the church submits to Christ as he exercises such leadership, wives should likewise submit to their husbands. And the last verse in 33, the wife must respect her husband. This is incredibly challenging. This is a very high calling. I think the Bible calls us to have the same attitude, to have the same attitude and the same willingness to be led by our husbands as it is for Christ to lead us. Now, we don't always understand God's plan. It doesn't always work out the way we want it to work out. But we're willing to follow. We're willing to obey. We say, you know, Jesus, I follow Jesus, and I'm willing to deny myself and lay down my life for him. And so the Bible calls us to have the exact same attitude towards our husband, to be easy to be led, that we should submit to our husbands, unless, like Van also said, it will hurt you spiritually or cause you to fall away. And that's a very high calling. It says we must respect our husbands. You respect your husband when you accept his choices. You accept them. You don't disagree with them. Even if you don't agree with them, you still accept his choices, whether it's big or small. You honor those choices. You don't criticize it or insult him or laugh at it or make fun of it. You accept it and you honor his choices, whether the choices of clothes, food, friendship, work, as you accept it and you honor his choices. If you disagree, you don't dismiss his ideas. To respect him is to treat him as an adult and not as a child. You don't tear him down, and you don't try and improve him. Now, I think this is, every day is a challenge for me in this. I think on different things. Vanna could do something as, you know, could be very helpful and say he's going off to the shop. Do I need anything? And I can say, oh, please bring some milk and bread. And as he closes the door, I'm like, just make sure you check the date. And what am I saying? It's saying he can't even do that. He can't buy bread and milk without me having to have the little say and check the date. I mean, he's not a child. He's an adult. And what does it matter? But it's just disrespectful. It's insulting his intelligence. You know, if your husband feels secure in your opinion of him, and he knows you're on his side, and you won't shoot arrows at his weaknesses, he won't second guess himself, and he will relax and feel confident in himself, and let his guard down to allow you into his inner life, his innermost thoughts. And I think for women, this can be very challenging. In most of my counseling situations, as well, I think. It's women think, we tend to think we're just wanting to be helpful. We just want to be helpful. you know, here's a parking, park here. Or, you know, don't drive that route, take this route. We think we're being helpful. Helpfulness in wife language translates to controlling in husband language. It's, we're controlling. And so, no, you're not helpful, you're controlling. Your generous help will go unappreciated and just leave you resentful. That's where it'll end. And so if you are first to speak, you're last to speak, and you're always the one speaking the most, you're not allowing your husband to lead you. Now, the question is, what if your husband makes or acts in a way that is not respectful? Because it's true, our husbands aren't Jesus. They're not perfect, just like we're not perfect. You know, and often people say, but he doesn't do things that deserves my respect. Or what do I do then? And, you know, I think a lot of us have heard this. You know, we need to love the sinner and not the sin. It's the same with, I can say, I don't feel kind towards someone, but I can act or treat you in a kind way. Irrespective of how I feel. And it's the same with respect. You can treat him with respect even if you don't agree with what just happened. It's the respect that's important.
I wish we could have a camera on this side and on these different points sort of zoom in on certain faces where you can see the husband's like, yeah, and the wife's going, yeah. So you got to know your role. And you have to remind yourself every day of that role. Main thing is, husbands, love your wives, cherish them, lead them well, and obviously wives, respect your husband. The second thing, we're just going to take a look at three, is you've got to choose a winning attitude. In other words, you'll see the people most probably who are in winter or autumn have a negative attitude about their marriage, and a negative attitude most probably about life as well. Whereas people who are in spring and summer most probably have more of a positive attitude about their marriage and a positive attitude about life. And our emotions are incredibly powerful because we act on them. And how I feel is what I'll end up doing. And that's why in the Bible in Philippians chapter 4, Paul says this. He says, finally, brothers, whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about such things. So it gives us guidance as to what our attitude should be in life, and particularly, I believe, there was not written in this text for that, but marriage. Whatever is true, whatever is admirable, whatever is lovely, whatever is pure, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about these things. For those of us that are at this stage in spring or summer, those are most probably the kind of thoughts that we have about our spouse. As we think about the positive, we think about what we appreciate about them, we think about what they mean for us and how grateful we are for them. And we're looking at the positive things. Those of us that are in darker seasons, most probably are not. So how do we get there? How do we choose that winning attitude? Number one is you need to acknowledge that you actually have a negative attitude. So you got to acknowledge and say, "What, you know what? My attitude in this marriage actually stinks. I'm not trying to win in this thing. I'm making no effort. And my heart, I've given up. And my heart, I've let go. And my heart, I've made peace with. This is just the way that it is, and that's just the way that it's going to be." And you've got to acknowledge that. You've got to acknowledge that you've got a negative attitude, negative thinking, and that your negative attitude and thinking is not biblical. And it ain't going to help you in your marriage. Number one, acknowledge that you've got negative thinking. Number two, and this I would encourage everybody to do, is identify and list your spouse's positive traits. Actually take a booklet or a piece of paper, write down, number one, the most positive thing about my spouse is, and you write it down. And then number two, this is what I think about my spouse. This is what is positive about them. Number three, number four, I would actually even encourage that we pray about it. That you pray and say, "God, help me. Please make it clear to me. What do you view, Father, as the most positive thing in John? Or what do you view as the most positive thing in Karen? What are the things that come to mind for you?" Even go to your children and ask them, "What is it about Dad? What is it that you love about Dad? What is it that you love about Mom?" But get the positive things. We have to make a list, get it together, and say, "Let me list and identify what are the positive things in my spouse."
I think after you've identified it, you've got to focus on those positive traits. You by thanking God for them and going through that list every day, thanking God for your spouse's characteristics. To pray that God will turn your negative thinking to a positive. And again, that takes thinking. You've got to think it through. It's so easy to think, my husband doesn't spend enough time with the kids. But if you think through it, you know, on a Saturday afternoon, he takes the kids for a walk. But it's so easy to just, if you're in a negative thinking pattern, you just think the negative. Or he's always at work. He works very hard at work to bring money home so that you can buy the things you do. You know, to not just look at the negative, what is the positive in those negatives, and to change that thinking. I think to apologize for your negative attitude and the condemning messages that you give. And this, again, is something that I've definitely needed help with, is how to properly apologize. I don't know if you've ever been in a situation where someone apologizes to you. They say sorry, but as they walk away, you think, did they really apologize now? You know, and I think you've got to be specific. When you apologize, you've got to be very specific. It's saying, "I apologize for being disrespectful when I criticized the way you were helping, you know, Michaela with her homework," and to let that sink in, to be very specific. And I think for us as women, the temptation can be to follow up the apology with an explanation. It's just that you need to be a little bit more patient with an 8-year-old. So what do you do when you say that? You need to apologize again because you were disrespectful again. You're just impatient. And that's, so do you understand what I'm saying with apologizing, being specific, and then to bite your tongue? Otherwise, you're going to just need to apologize again. So listen to his response after you apologize and acknowledge that you've heard him. I think also to pray that God will help you to give you a biblical perspective of your spouse.
So can I say something on the apology, just because we've both gone through that? Don't apologize if you're not sorry. Okay? So one is you've got to have a conviction in your heart that my negative attitude is taking us into autumn, into winter. That's not helping. And you've got to have a conviction in your heart that I'm sorry. I'm a big cause of us heading that direction. And with that heart and spirit, if you go to your spouse and you say, whether husband or wife, I'm sorry. I can really see how destructive my spirit and attitude has been, and I'm really sorry, and I hope that somehow you can forgive me. It's hard when someone is really apologetic and sincere from their hearts to say, oh, I can't forgive you. It's easy to do that when you feel it's insincere. But first, you've got to be sorry, and it will go a long way.
So I think to pray that God will give you a biblical perspective of your spouse, that they were created in the image of God. They are uniquely gifted. They are there to complement you. They're a blessing, not a curse. And that the purpose of marriage or the goal of marriage is to glorify God and help your spouse to be the best he can be for God. I think to express your appreciation verbally to your spouse. In Proverbs 18, I think it'll come up on the screen, verse 21, it says, the tongue has the power of life and death. You know, we can give our marriages new life by the way we speak. Tell them what you see in them, whether that's starting with once a week and then twice a week and then once a day. But tell them what you admire, what you appreciate. Because when you replace condemnation and criticism with words of affirmation and appreciation, something inside your spouse will change. From where it was cold, it becomes warm again. The emotions and the feeling in your marriage will change.
Okay, so positive attitude, faithful attitude, whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is excellent or praiseworthy, think about such things in your spouse. Tell them all the time. So that's number two. Number one, we got know your role. Number two, choosing a winning attitude. Number three is empathetic listening. Okay, the ability to speak and listen is actually a gift that we've been given that I don't think we always appreciate. Meaning, animals can't exactly sit around the campfire and reminisce over the last 5 years. I say, do you remember? Oh, yeah, no, I remember when we were there, and I remember when we did that. And we have that privilege as human beings that we are able to talk, and that we're able to listen, and that we're able to communicate. And open communication is the lifeblood of a summer marriage. Failure to communicate, though, will push you right into autumn and into winter. A study was done in the United States as to divorced individuals were asked, why did your marriage fail? Okay, what happened? What went wrong? 87% said deficient communication. 87% of divorced couples said the reason that our marriage failed is our inability to communicate. We were not able to talk through. We were not able to hear. We were not able to listen. We were not able to understand. I believe that most probably most of those marriages could have been redeemed and restored through empathetic listening. Empathy, I think most of us knows, it means that you place yourself in the other person's world. You walk in their shoes. You see things from their perspective. Now, here is a mistake that, let me just clear this up from the beginning for men. Don't put yourself in their situation and figure it out the way that you would. So in other words, empathy is not, well, I had a tough day at work, my boss was really nasty with me, it was really tough, and then you put yourself in the situation and you think, well, what would I have done? Well, if my boss was nasty, I would just say to him, geez, man, get with it, or just ignore him, or what have you. You're not putting yourself in your wife's shoes. Putting yourself in your wife's shoes is with who your wife is, with the feelings that she has, with if she's maybe a very sensitive soul, if she's maybe sick at this time, if she maybe feels distant from you, then ask yourself, what would it be like if her boss treated her that way when she's feeling sick, when she's feeling distant, when she feels insecure, and when she feels, in general, just very sensitive at this stage of life? How would that affect her? It changes everything. Now you're showing empathy. Okay, we need to learn to listen empathetically. How do we do it? By developing a genuine attitude of understanding. In Proverbs chapter 20, verse 5, it says, the purpose of a man's heart are deep waters, but a man of understanding draws them out. The purposes of a man's heart are deep waters, but a man of understanding draws them out. When we understand one another and we express genuine understanding, we're able to draw each other out. The opposite of that in Proverbs 18, verse 2 says, a fool finds no pleasure in understanding, but delights in airing his own opinion. A fool doesn't want to understand. Have you ever been a fool? Oh man, I've been there countless times where Lisa's trying to explain something to me. Oh no, 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 you misunderstood me. Oh no, that's not what I meant. Oh no, that's not true. Oh no, that's not the way it happened. Oh no, not by any word, not by a long shot, not by a long shot. Okay? Is that any form of understanding? This is a fool delights in airing his own opinion. A fool just wants to say, well, this is my side of the story, but does not seek to understand. By nature, we are self-focused. The world revolves around us. We're egocentric. And it's a massive step in maturity in a marriage to say that I'm able to almost switch off. And if I say switch off, I don't mean it disconnect your heart. I'm able to switch off my needs, my perspective, and my perceptions, and just try and understand your needs, your perspective, and your reality at this moment. I'm trying to understand it. I'm not trying to agree with it. I'm not trying to solve it. All I'm trying to do is I just want to understand. I want to understand where you're coming from. I want to understand what it is that you're feeling. I understand why it is that you're feeling that way. Number two, in empathetic listening, is choosing to withhold judgment on our spouse's ideas. I think none of us, who of us have done that, been judgmental with something with our spouse? Okay. Now, empathetic listeners choose, and this is a conscious decision, to withhold judgment from your spouse's ideas. Let me give you a couple of examples. I'll do a man and a woman. Your wife comes home. She's had a tough day at work. The boss yelled at her. Things just went badly. She walks in and she says, I'm going to quit my job. And you say, how can you quit your job? We need the money. You're the one that wanted to live in this house in the first place. I didn't want that car. I didn't want that couch. And now you're the one that's wanting to quit your job. How can you be thinking about quitting your job? Versus, could that conversation have turned out a little bit differently if you said, wow, honey, it sounds like you had a rough day. Do you want to tell me more about it? Okay, the smiling wives. Husband comes home from church. I'm not going to go to church anymore. How can you not go to church? What do you think to our family? The whole thing's going to fall apart. God's supposed to be first. What are you thinking? Versus, could it have maybe have been different? He said, wow, why? Why do you feel like you don't want to go to church anymore? I feel discouraged. Why do you feel discouraged? I feel like I never measure up. You know, it's everything I talk about, it's just failure. I don't do any of that. I just feel like I don't have the courage to go. Doesn't that conversation sort of turn out very differently if you are consciously able to withhold judgment and say, I'm not going to make a judgment call on this issue. I'm just going to listen. I'm going to seek to understand. That's all I want to do at this time. That's I just want to understand.
Number three is to affirm your spouse even when you disagree with his or her ideas. And that's in saying things like expressing it when you say things like, I appreciate that you're being open and honest with me, is affirm them. Now I understand why you feel so hurt. If I were in your shoes, I'm sure I would have felt exactly the same way. So it's affirming them. I want you to know that I love you very much, and it hurts me to see you hurting like this. And I appreciate you being honest. That's setting the stage for a warmth, there's security, there's, okay, I can be more open if this is the environment. I think you affirm your spouse also in the way that you listen. When you listen with your entire body, with your eyes, that you're focusing on him, with your mouth, that you're not interrupting, with your hands, you're not fiddling with a pencil, or you're focusing, you're listening, you really want to understand. With your back, you're leaning forward, you're like, I am here with you in this moment. With your feet, you're not running off to the kids or into the kitchen and busy with dinner. You're listening to the feelings as well as the facts. I think number four is you share your own ideas only when your spouse feels understood. And again, this is where this is a choice, like Vanna said. It's a choice that we make to withhold our ideas, to not give it prematurely, to wait until your spouse feels understood or asks for input.
I think I often make that mistake in general with Lisa, with my kids, with everybody, is when people want your help, they'll ask for it. So in other words, if they're not asking, they're not wanting. So in other words, if your wife wants to know what she should do about the situation, she'll ask you. Okay, where my tendency is, I'm going to give her a good direction as to how to deal with the situation without her asking. And I might feel better about myself afterwards because I feel like I've now fixed it, or I have won the day, I was on the white horse and I came over the hill, and now she's going to feel all better. But she, and I don't think it's just with women, I think men is the same thing, you actually just want to be heard. Whether it's something that whether it's you're in your marriage and you feel like your wife, and women sometimes think that this is impossible, but you don't feel, as a husband, you don't feel loved by your wife. And when you communicate that to her, all that the dude actually wants is he just wants to be heard. He's not even saying, this is the tricky thing with feelings, he's not even saying that it's true or right, or she's not even saying that it's true or right. What they are saying is, this is what I'm feeling. This is what I'm experiencing. I feel unloved. I feel not cherished. I feel disrespected. It doesn't even mean I am disrespected. And I know we're not always good at communicating that. But it's what I'm feeling. And we have to be able to just acknowledge that. And so I appreciate you sharing that with me. And I'm so sorry for anything that I've done or the things that you've mentioned that have led you to feel that way. And if they want advice on that particular thing, or they want advice on how to deal with the situation, they will most likely say, and Lisa always does this, usually if I've had a time of listening, she will say to me, what do you think? What do you think I should do? Or what do you think my next step should be? What have you? But then they ask. That is empathetic listening. So again, this is not comprehensive, but there are three nuggets. Well, those are three nuggets that I pray would be able to help you to transition through the seasons, that wherever you're at, that you'll just focus on those three simple things. One is that you'll be able to remember your role. Okay, when you're in the middle of a disagreement or when things don't seem to be going the way they should, remember your role. What is my role as a husband? It is to cherish. It is to serve. It is to love. It's to give. What is my role as a wife? It's to remain respectful, even if he made the wrong choices. Even if he did something silly, don't agree with the decision, but I'm going to continue to treat him in a respectful way. I'm not going to mother him. Okay, I'm going to continue to be respectful to him. And then I'll be an empathetic listener. I'll listen carefully to what's being said, understood, and I'll have a positive attitude about our marriage. What we want to ask you to do right now is, on page number 3, if again, for the couples individually, if you can fill that out over the next 5 minutes, I know there's a section that talks about love languages. Question number 4 you can leave out. We didn't get to that. We ran out of time. But if you can please fill out those first 3 questions over the next 5 minutes. Thank you. Okay, how are we doing? We still need some time? Can we give them still a minute or two? Okay, everyone more or less done? Okay, now for the next 5 minutes, turn to your spouse. Switch lists. Switch lists. And then talk through it. Okay, so... switch lists, just to make sure that you're honest here, switch lists. And then question one, in what way would you say you're currently fulfilling your God-given role as a spouse? Then you start off by saying, sweetie, here is what I very arrogantly thought. Then you just say, okay, this is how I felt like I'm doing it, and this is how I feel like you're doing it, and the reverse. Does that make sense? Sorry? Okay, what you do is switch lists, and then let's say I've now switched with my wife, and I'm doing question one. I've now got her list, she's got my list. And question one is, in what way would you say you are currently fulfilling your God-given role as a spouse? Then she can maybe even start reading it to me and saying, this is what I said. And so we can learn from one another. So we read each other's to each other. And then obviously say, how do you feel about that? In other words, this is how I'm perceiving myself to be fulfilling my God-given role. How do you feel about that? Am I on track? Am I off track? Okay. Amen. Let the games begin.